How are you guys doing this morning? You feel good? You look good? It's cold outside this morning. Man, I dig this time of year. It makes me feel better. It makes me feel good. It does make me a little more sarcastic, so I need to warn you of that, okay? But I'm always excited about being in church, excited about seeing you guys. But as we've already mentioned, today is our 11th birthday. It's our 11th birthday, and, you know, in some ways, that seems like only a couple years ago, and in some ways, it seems like it was decades and decades ago. And over the last 11 years, man, we've had some really great times, some really great highs. We've had some really low lows. I mean, life has an ebb and flow, doesn't it? It's true in your life. It's true in the life of a church, because a church is not an organization. It's an organism. And so there's the ebb and flow of things. And so there's been the good times. There's been bad times. But through it all, we've survived. We've stayed. You know, I don't know what the statistics are now, but when Karen and I were starting Rocky River Church 12 years ago, when we began planning for it, it was hard to find a new church start that was 2 years old. Most churches didn't make it to their second birthday. And then beyond that, you couldn't find a church hardly that could survive for 5 years. But and this was this is what they used to say in church planting, that if a church could make it 10 years, then it would probably survive. And so here we are, 11 years old, going into our 12th year of ministry. And man, if nothing else, we've lasted. We've held out. And I can remember in those earliest days, you know, we started Rocky River with 8 people. And I can remember the first night that we had our what we called back then a core group of people. We were meeting in mine and Karen's living room over off Leatherwood Lane in Harrisburg. And I can remember casting the vision to that group of people and talking to them about a new church, because some people were like, "Well, why are you starting a new church? There's a church on every corner." And this is not true maybe so much today, but it was certainly true then. There was a church on every corner, and that's still true. But then there were not churches that were reaching out to people who had never been to church, or people who were disenfranchised with church. You know, you may not realize this, but there are churches around that some people aren't welcome to go to. And so I cast the vision all those many years ago to those people in my living room, about starting a church for people either who were not going, or people who had never been to church, or people who were not welcome or just disenfranchised with church as usual. And I knew back then that probably wouldn't grow a mega church, because that's not the way you grow a mega church. The way you grow a mega church is you figure out how to do it better than every other church in your area. And, you know, you'll get some people who are disenfranchised, but you start pulling people who go to other churches and things like that. And I just believe that Jesus has called us to be fishers of men, not keepers of the aquarium, where we just kind of swap fish around from place to place. And, golly, when we started Rocky River, we had no money. We had no members. I remember that core group of 8 people. With my great teaching and vision casting, in just a few weeks, I had grown that to 4 people. And, you know, so in those days, we had no money, no members, no place to meet. Just this vision of starting a church for real people. And again, for people who've never been to church, or people who had given up on church as usual. And sometimes it's a little bit scary when you look at where we are now, because over those years, I was trying to figure it out this morning. And I wish in those earlier days, Faye, that we would have kept better records on the people that were baptized and stuff like that. But we didn't care back then. We were just dunking people, and you know, we were just happy. We were just happy when somebody walked in the door. I can remember in the early days, if a pregnant woman walked in, we counted hers twice. She was two people coming in the door. But when I just think through the years, you know, we've baptized over 300 people. You know what that means? That's not just numbers. I mean, we count people now. We count everything, but we count people because people count. And 300 people, that means that because of the work that God has done through the group of people here, people who have been here and not here anymore, and the group of people that we have now, that means that 300 plus people, and maybe some people we don't even know about, have changed columns. You know, there are two columns. There's a spiritually lost column, and there's a spiritually saved column. People aren't divided. In God's economy, in God's world, in His culture, people aren't divided up. Men and women, black and white, gay or straight or anything else. In God's world, in God's economy, people are marked by either they are spiritually lost or spiritually saved. And so it just means that one day, if everything stops right now today, one day there'll be 300 people in heaven because of the work that we've done here. I can remember, and some of you guys have heard this stuff before, and probably, like, I can't believe Jimmy's talking about this again, but it's nostalgic, you know, on your birthday. I can remember, you know, when we didn't have all this stuff, there were no pipes and drapes and speakers like this. Everything that we had, we could get in the back seat, not the trunk, the back seat of a Toyota Camry. And honestly, we carried everything we owned with us from our office to the elementary school every Sunday in the back of that Camry. And so God has taken us from that and just a handful of people to literally several hundred people who call Rocky River their home church. And in just a few months, we'll be moving into a building that, when you put the land and everything with it, it's just under $2 million. And that doesn't speak to anything that's good about your pastor or the staff that we have now, or staff that we've had in the past. All of that speaks of the goodness and the faithfulness to God. And you know, the thing that we've had to do over those years, over the last few years, is just be here and be open, be available for God to do what He wants to do in this community. That's really it. I've learned a lot. Learned some really important lessons. And here's one of the lessons I've been thinking about for probably the last couple of weeks now. It's really hard to start something from scratch. It's really hard to start something from scratch. It's even harder to stay with something. You know, to stick it out. In fact, sticking it out, when you think about just staying somewhere or staying with something that you start, that seems way harder than just starting something. Because, you know, even when you're starting something and you don't have a whole lot, you're just full of vim and vigor, and you know, you've got all this energy, and to start something, you know, that's fun. But then, you know, the newness of things wears off. It just gets hard to stick around. But I think that it's even harder still to stay, to finish, to follow something all the way to the very end and not quit. And I have to be honest with you, every Monday for at least the first 2 years of this church, and maybe the first three, I wanted to quit. But, you know, quitting's just never been an option for Karen and I, because we believe so much in you and what God wants to do here, but in the call that God has put on our lives. And we've seen some amazing, amazing things. And I didn't come this morning to tell you about all those amazing things, but what I do want to talk to you about this morning is how you do finish things. How do you finish the things that you start. And I'm not just talking about, you know, how do you follow through on cleaning out the closets in your house? You know, that's a project that you start and you don't ever finish. I mean, I'm sure that closets are important, but I'm talking today about how to finish the things in life that really, really matter. Now, just for today, we're going to break out of our Daniel series. We're going to go back to it next week with a message called Vertical, which is a message on prayer. Daniel was infamous for his prayer. We're going to learn how to pray from Daniel. And then the following Sunday, we're going to wrap up our series in Daniel with a message called The End of the World as We Know It. It's an end times message from the book of Daniel. And so you're definitely going to want to be here for that. I know lots of people have questions about those things. But today, we're going to go to the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah chapter 4. And I'm going to be teaching in verses 6 through 12. And I'll get there in just a minute or two. But I want to bridge the gap a little bit between what we've been dealing with in the book of Daniel and where we are today in Nehemiah. And if you've been here for our Daniel series, you know that in roughly 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar and his Babylonian army, and Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians were the superpower at the time, they sacked Jerusalem and the Jews there, the people of God, and they carted off most of the people back to Babylon to live in captivity. And you remember that group, that's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and, you know, other Jews. And as we followed Daniel's life through the book of Daniel, we saw him last week where he's about 80 or 85 years old. And so we're going to fast forward from that, from Jerusalem being sacked and Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to Nehemiah chapter 4, and it's some 160 years later. And so Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those guys are gone. They've been gone for a long time. And so now you have a second and third generation of Jews who are born into captivity. Nehemiah is one of those guys. He's never been to Jerusalem. His ancestors are from there. It's kind of like my family. All of my family's from eastern North Carolina. They're from the Lumberton, Bladenboro area. I have been there, but I'm not from there, but I trace my ancestry back to that. That's what Nehemiah would say about Jerusalem. He'd never been there, heard the stories, traces all of his ancestors back there. But one of the things that I want you to see, and I want you to hang with me because this gets interesting in a minute if you're not interested right now. One of the things I want you to see, and especially if you've been with us in our Daniel series, because even while the Jews, the children of God, are in Babylonian captivity, and it would seem like these kings, these secular pagan kings are in control, God is really in control. And he's putting his people, like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and today Nehemiah, in places where they can be used. God is at work, not just in Jerusalem, but God is at work in the world. And I would say that here, that we need to remember that. God's not just at work in this gymnasium right here. God's at work in this larger community. He's at work in Jerusalem. He's at work in Samaria. He's at work, you know, all over the world. Just like us, we have missionaries that we're sponsoring that are going to reach unreached people groups, never heard of our God, never heard of the God of the Bible, never heard of Jesus, never seen the Bible. God is at work in the world. Here's how he's at work in Nehemiah's life. He got Nehemiah a job, which sounds really good right now in our economy, doesn't it? We'd all like for God to get, well, a lot of us would like God to get us a job because lots of people are looking for work. Now, if you've got a job and you think your job stinks, let me tell you about Nehemiah's job. Nehemiah was an assistant to Artaxerxes, the Persian king, and he has this fancy title called the cupbearer. But here's what the cupbearer did. There was always someone trying to kill the king, and one of the favorite ways to kill a king was to poison his food. Now, Nehemiah had other responsibilities with the king. He assisted him in other ways, but his primary job was that whenever the king wanted something to eat, Nehemiah had to start eating it first. And so you kind of get this mental picture of Nehemiah sitting at the king's table. Maybe he's got a TV tray and he's pulled up in front of the TV, ready to watch the ball game or the race. And he starts eating, and there's a group of people standing there to see if he starts to break out in hives, or just to see if he falls over dead. And if he doesn't break out in hives or fall over dead, they take the plate away and they give it to the king. That's his job, to eat the king's food first, to make not all of it, but parts of it, to make sure that it's not poison. But what that did, while it seems like a tough job, it kept Nehemiah in the presence of Artaxerxes. And one day, while he's... And guys, please, I don't want to chase a whole lot of rabbits here up front, but I just feel like I've got so much to say. Some of you are in jobs and you're in stages in life and you can't believe that you're here or where you are. It may be that God has put you right where he wants you to be because he's got a bigger opportunity coming along for you. Don't miss that this morning. Nehemiah, one day, is in the presence of the king when a group of travelers or traders come from the area of Jerusalem, and he gives a report, because, you know, they didn't have cell phones or, you know, effective ways of communication. You just had to get reports from other people who've been moving around in different places. They bring a report, and a part of the report gives a status update for Jerusalem. And Nehemiah, again, he's never been to Jerusalem, but he loves Jerusalem. That's where his people are from. And the report is that the wall around the city is still in ruins. And the city itself is still in ruins. And it pierces Nehemiah's heart. Because he knew if that wall is still in ruins, that means the people are still unprotected. 160 years later, the place of his people, the place he'd like to go one day, is in ruins. And the people are left unprotected to the other nomads and the raiding tribes that would come in and steal from them and take parts of them, groups of them away for slaves and just all sorts of things. It broke his heart. And you know, very often God will use a broken heart to give a person a vision. And God took that opportunity in Nehemiah's life, who had a broken heart for his people back in Jerusalem, and he gave him a vision to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls around the city. You know, I hadn't always been the preacher that wears... I look pretty decent today. I mean, everything's kind of pressed and cleaned and all. But I mean, I didn't always wear tennis shoes and shorts to preach to a group of people. I didn't grow up in a church that looked anything like what we have today. I grew up in a church that was... It was a high church, Southern Baptist church. We chimed in the ringing of the worship hour. We started with the choral anthems. That's the kind of church that I pastored before I started Rocky River. But my heart was broken for people who are disenfranchised, not with God, but with church. My heart was broken because there were people who wanted God, but were not welcomed in church. And so God used that broken heart in my life to give me a vision to start Rocky River Church. So Nehemiah dealt with his broken heart and this vision. God kind of worked this thing in his life a little bit. And God gave Nehemiah an opportunity to speak with the king about his vision. Artaxerxes saw that he wasn't doing too well one day. He was sad. He said, "What's going on? What do you want?" And he said, "The city walls around Jerusalem and around my ancestors are still in ruins." Artaxerxes says, "What do you want to do?" He says, "I want to go back there and rebuild the wall." And so Artaxerxes sent him, but listen, he did more than just send him. He didn't send him back there to kind of fend for himself and have to figure things out once he got there and have to mobilize a group of people once he was there. He said, "I'm going to send you, but I'm going to make you the governor of Jerusalem." And so when you leave here, you're going to have papers and the authority so that if anybody tries to stand in your way, you tell them you work for me. You show them these papers and this will be enough. They'll know that if they give you a hard time and they try to prevent you, that I could bring the Persian army in to squash them. So he sent the resources, he sent the authority with them, and he sent a group of captives back to rebuild the wall. Now that brings us to our focus text this morning, Nehemiah chapter 4. I lost my bookmarker. Verses 6 through 12. Listen to this. Nehemiah said, he gets there, the resources, the building project is underway, construction is happening, and Nehemiah says, so we rebuilt the wall until it reached half of its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard that the repairs of Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were angry. Because these are some of the tribal leaders that lived around the city ruins who would come in every now and again and steal all of the children that had been born. And they would take them back to their own tribal people and make them slaves or wives or whatever they wanted to do with them. So they are not happy with the building project that's going on in Jerusalem. Let me tell you something. When we started Rocky River Church, there were plenty of theys out there who were not happy about what we were doing. Because they, other pastors, other churches, they didn't understand what we were all about. They didn't get what we're doing. Here's what I've learned. And I want to say this too. The leaders that we have in the room, and maybe we have a pastor or two that's thinking about starting their own church, you know, maybe in the audience or listening to the message on the website. Don't listen too much to the theys. I'm Southern, and so it's hard for me to get the theys out. You hear what I'm saying, though? Don, did you catch that? The theys. Don't listen to them. Because listen, the theys cheer and jeer. And so don't listen too much to the jeers. Because, you know, when they talk about they, you don't really know who they are. And they always seem to be a whole lot bigger crowd and a whole lot more powerful than they really are. And don't listen too much to the cheers either. Because sometimes the people who cheer you the most will be the ones who bite you later the hardest. So just be careful about the theys. But Nehemiah had his theys. They, verse 8, all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. So they're trying to sabotage this thing. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Verse 10, meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. Verse 11 and 12, also our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we'll be right there among them, and we will kill them and put an end to the work. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us, 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. So here's what I want to give you this morning, just very, very practically. I want to give you four reasons why the children of Israel, the Jews, who have gone back to rebuild the wall, and the Jews living in Jerusalem at the time, who had teamed up with Nehemiah, why they wanted to quit. And listen, this is the same four things that make us also want to quit on the important things in our lives that need to be finished. Here's number one. It's fatigue. I can't see the clock back there. Oh, I've got an hour and a half left to preach. Perfect. It's fatigue. You know, when these guys started rebuilding the wall, man, they were all about it. Nehemiah says that the people worked with all their heart. And man, they're just in there giving to everything that they have. But when they got about halfway finished, they got tired. They were just worn out. They had put everything they had into it, and they just got to a place where their patience and their attitude and their emotions, their resources probably, everything is just running thin. And so they just got to a place where they were just tired, and they were ready to quit. You know, the Vince Lombardi, the great Green Bay Packers coach, once said that fatigue makes cowards of us all. And isn't that true? Because, I mean, you've been doing other projects in your life, you know, like cleaning out the garage. You get everything out of the garage and on the lawn, and you're so happy about that. And then you look out on the lawn, and you just realize, man, it has taken so much to get to this point, and I'm only halfway finished. We've still got so much left to do, and it just can be so draining. It will just wear you out. And when we get tired, that's when we start thinking, well, maybe I'll just quit. I know there's some fatigue going on here. Some of you are feeling the fatigue of, you know, trying to work on your marriage and make that a God-honoring marriage. And some of you are just tired from trying to get your health in order or your finances in order. I don't know what the big projects are in your life, but I'm sure that some of you this morning are just fatigued. You're just tired. You're just worn out from that. I know that some of you feel that same sort of fatigue here in the church. You know, Karen is not Karen, who's my wife, just in case you're new and you don't know her. Karen is in the nursery today, and she has been our worship leader. Did I say worship? Nursery. She's in the nursery. She's been our nursery leader for 11 years. Very first Sunday, she took the nursery, and she's been doing it for 11 years. And I know she gets tired. Probably tired this morning. I can't get her out of the nursery, but I know that at times she gets tired. I know that some of you guys have been working on our setup and breakdown teams for nearly 10 years. You're not here every single Sunday morning, but you're here most of them. 45 Sundays out of the year, you'll be here at 6:30. And now we're getting into the tough time of the year, you know, because it's not warm outside. It's cold when you guys are over there hooking up trailers, and you can't wear gloves because it's hard to hook those trailers up with gloves. And so you're cold, and you're tired, and you're just worn out. And we have folks who serve, it seems like, constantly. I feel like I see the same people over and over again in the hallways, working with kids, putting together lessons, taking care of the K-5 ministry, working with students. I know what Travis goes through that with his volunteers and all. I know that a lot of you are just tired. Let me give you the remedy for fatigue. It's remembering what is at stake. When you're tired and you want to quit, and it ended a little bit worse for us even, because we kind of have the fatigue that comes with a setup like this, but we have short-timer's disease too, don't we? You know, it's like being a senior in high school in April. Man, you know May and June is right around the corner, and you have short-timer's disease, and so you want to stop studying, and you don't care about tests anymore, but you have to run it to the end, don't you? You have to stick with it to the end. We got short-timer's disease because we know that in a few months we're not going to be hooking up trailers anymore. We know that we're not going to have to set up for about 3 hours every Sunday morning and then, you know, take another couple of hours in the afternoon to break everything down. We know that that day's coming. But until it does, we have to remember what's at stake. For our church, let me tell you what's at stake. I've been talking about an experience that I had with the lady in our church years ago. I've been talking about it maybe once a year since it happened. And I'm paraphrasing basically her story to me. You know, in a church like ours, and it probably happens in other churches too, when a family is trying to find a church, it's usually mom that goes out and does the scouting. And so occasionally I'll see a lady come in, she'll maybe come in by herself, and I hope if you're a lady here this morning by yourself, you don't feel like you've got a target on you or something like that. But occasionally I'll see a lady come in, and I'll wonder, is she single? Is she a single mom? Or is she, you know, what's her story? Is she a scout? Because what mom will do, and this is how it worked out in this particular lady's life, I'm going to call her Jackie. Jackie came looking for a church, and her husband told her, I'll go with you to church one time. Because they didn't go to church. I'll go with you one time. And so she didn't want to just take him to any church because she knew she had one opportunity to get him in church. And so she shopped around a little bit, you know, went to several different churches. She ended up at Rocky River when we were meeting at Rocky River Elementary School. And she came for maybe 2 months before, I just assumed that she was a single person. She was coming by herself. But then after about a couple months, she showed up and she had a man with her, I assumed was her husband, and a couple kids. And she told me about the events that led up to that. She said, Jimmy, I came to Rocky River, and she said, I know that it was a new church, and you guys were just getting started, and you didn't have a whole lot. She said, but I felt welcomed and comfortable. And she said, my kids felt good in the nursery, you know, because Karen, I think, is pretty awesome back there in the nursery. The kids felt like they were comfortable. And she said, you're not the traditional kind of pastor. You don't look like him anyway. And so she said, I felt like I could bring my whole family here. And she said, I remember waking up that morning that I was bringing the whole family, which basically whole family just meant that she, the kids, and now she's bringing her husband. She said, as I was getting ready that morning, I was praying, Lord, when we get there, and by the way, I baptized Jackie, and later her husband too. But she said, Lord, please let there be a good place to park. Let there be a good place to park, because if Bill has to circle the parking lot 2 or 3 times, he's just going to say, hey, listen, we'll try church again later. Let's go and have a brunch over at IHOP's. And she said, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get him back. So, Lord, please let there be a parking spot. Lord, please let there be the friendly greeters out front of the church who speak to me and say good morning. You know, they're not like Egyptian traders or anything like that. So they're not trying to sell this and trying to do this and hugging all over us and make Bill feel weird. Don't let them be that way, but just let them be friendly so that at the end of the day, Bill can't walk away going, man, these people were just unfriendly. And when we get to the nursery, when we drop the kids off, please let it be so-and-so back there working in the nursery so that the kids don't start crying. And they had a little girl at the time who wasn't real comfortable in the nursery, and I don't remember her name. But if she starts crying, Bill will say, listen, you go into the service, and I'll stay out in the hall with the baby. And I already know Jesus, but Bill doesn't. Bill needs Jesus. Lord, please let the kids do well, and let the band be good. Because the night before, they had gone to a local pub and heard a band, and Bill was just crazy about that band, and they were so good. And please, let our band be good this morning so that he won't walk away at the end of the day going, see, man, that's church. It's just cheesy. And please let Jimmy be on today. And she said something to me, Travis, that I think about a lot. She said, I hope that Jimmy has had enough time with you this week so that he knows what the message is from you, so he's ready to give it to Bill, because Bill needs Jesus. And all the way through the message, she's praying that Bill is listening and paying attention, and she's worried that there's going to be something that distracts him. And do you see what I'm saying? You see what that looks like? When you're fatigued, you have to remember what's at stake. If you'll remember what's at stake, that'll give you the second wind or the third wind or the tenth wind or whatever it takes to get it through, to make it happen, to keep greeting the way you're supposed to out in the hallways, to keep working on lessons for the kids because it matters, to keep spending time as pastor with God during the week, even though there are so many other things that could distract from that, because Bill's eternity is on the line. And that's what you do in your life. You have to remember what's at stake. When you're working on that marriage, when you're working with the kids, when you're working on the things that matter the most, you have to remember what is at stake. Here's the second thing that causes us to sometimes want to quit. It's frustration. It's frustration. There's so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. You know, with any construction project, whether you've built something brand new, maybe a home or some other sort of building project that you were involved in, or you've just done some remodeling work, you know that rubble builds up, doesn't it? There's always debris. And so can you imagine the debris piles that were building up in Jerusalem while these people are building a whole wall around an entire city? I mean, there's piles of broken brick and broken mortar and pieces of metal and scraps of wood all over the place. And so again, they look out at the project and they've seen everything that it's taken to get them to this point. And then all the piles of the debris, it just reminds them of how much is left to do. And it's just frustrating. And so when you get frustrated with something, don't you just tend to think, well, maybe I'll just quit. I felt like that a few times over the last few months with the city of Concord, with the DOT, with our architect, just with the circumstances around things. And there were times where we could have just said, forget it. This is too hard. And just quit. But I'm gonna tell you, well, maybe I won't tell you exactly the way my daddy tells me when I get frustrated and want to quit something, because we have mixed company in the room. But when you get frustrated with something, and you don't have any idea how frustrated I get sometimes with this church, just with things, because we're still working on stuff. There, so to speak, as a way of speaking with our church, there are still the debris piles, not just out here on the construction site, but things are always changing a little bit, trying to figure out the right way to do things and the right combinations. And I know that gets frustrating. And so at Rocky River, if you get frustrated because things change, this might not be the church for you, because I'm telling you that things change. But when you get frustrated over that and you want to quit, what you have to do is you have to buckle down, redouble your efforts, and just work through the frustration. You just have to deal with the pile of rubble. Quitting doesn't help. Here's the third thing that makes us want to quit. It's failure. It's failure. You know, can you imagine the caravan? And I should know how far it is from Jerusalem to Babylon, but I don't. But it would have taken them days, if not weeks or months, to get from Babylon to Jerusalem. And can't you imagine, you know, they've got lots of food, plenty of resources and stuff like that. So they're traveling, man, and they're excited at night, maybe sitting around a bowl of stew or whatever, and they're talking about the wall, and they're trying to put the construction schedule together. And, you know, when you're building something or remodeling, you always think you're going to get finished or be in that new home sooner than what is reality. You know, we have a great contractor. And if we would have been able to get permits when we thought we were going to get permits, we would be in the building by Christmas. I have no doubt about that. But we just got our permits last week. All that stuff has been approved. And they start work on Monday, and we get a new revised construction schedule that's probably going to show us moving into the new building mid-February. But that's not Christmas, is it? See, we thought we'd be in the building sooner. And if we'd had the permits, I'm sure that Choate could have gotten it done. But you always think that you're going to get finished with something a little quicker than what is reality. And that's what's going on with the children of Israel. These guys thought that they would be done by now. And instead of being finished, they're only halfway finished. And so here's the way they marked that up in their own lives. They marked it up as failure. They thought of themselves as failures. I want you to listen to me for a minute. I mean, listen really close. No one has an unbroken string of successes. We all fail now and again. In fact, I will tell you this, that if you're not failing occasionally, you're not trying hard enough. You're going to have some failures. But you're not a failure until you quit. The remedy for failures is to just change your mindset and realize, I have some failures, but I'm not a failure until I quit. You should take quitting out of your vocabulary. You're not a failure until you quit. And then here's the fourth thing. It's fear. Sometimes we want to quit because of fear. This is not in your notes, but you can jot this down somewhere on the back maybe. There are three basic kinds of fears that stop us from doing the important things in our lives. One is the fear of attack. And that's what you see in this passage, isn't it? Because literally, there are enemies, and not all the enemies are on the outside. Some of the enemies were the Jews who lived inside of the torn down, burnt up walls. They had teamed up with the enemies to keep this project from going forward. But there were enemies that literally were willing to kill them to stop them. And so sometimes the projects that you're working on in life, the things that really matter, believe me, Satan will come after that. He'll send people after you. There will be enemies. There will be people who don't want you to finish that. It may even be things that threaten your life. There's also the fear of failure. We've already talked about failures, but some people are so skittish because they've had some failures before. So sometimes they're paralyzed with fear, and they never even get started on something, or they barely get started before they just back out too soon because they're afraid they're going to fail again. But then there's also the fear of success. And I think that that's what's going on with the Jews who have teamed up with the other enemies on the outside of the walls who want to stop this. They have grown up too, because remember, they're not first generation people living in the ruins. They're second and third generations themselves. They know what life is like living in a ruined city where everything is torn down and destroyed, where there are no protecting walls. They already knew what that life was like. And so there was the fear of the unknown. We don't know what life is going to be like in a healthy marriage. We don't know what life is going to be like if we have a healthy, God-honoring home. You see, it's the fear of the unknown. They knew what it was like to live in rubble. And even though that wasn't good, they had adapted to that, you see? And I never really got this whole fear of success thing until I had my gastric bypass surgery a couple months ago. I can remember lying on the operating bed, or, you know, the gurney, whatever you call those things, and I'm waiting for the doctor to come in and, you know, give me the goodbye shot, you know, the shot that sent me off to La La Land for a while. And I got afraid. I got afraid because I know what it's like to live as a fat man, but I don't remember what it's like to live as a thin man. I mean, I don't like the heavy part. I don't like the unhealthy part. You know, sometimes I sit down on the stool and cross my legs just because I can again. I don't like this, but I know what this life is like. But I don't remember what it's like to be healthy. It's the fear of the unknown. You know, some of you guys are living with broken lives and broken relationships. You've got piles of unfinished project all around you. And you've just learned how to live with that. It's the way hoarders learn to live with the piles of trash in their home. They know what that life is like, and they've adapted to that. But it's the fear of the unknown, of having a house that's clean, living in an environment that's healthy. They're afraid of that because that means change in their life. Let me tell you what you do. This is the remedy for fear. Whatever your brand of fear is, it's found in Psalm 46, and you should have that somewhere. There it is. The Bible says, and this is not a man who's just writing poetry. This is a man who has lived with all sorts of fear, all the fears that we've talked about and those that we haven't. But he is able to say, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. We will not be afraid. When you're afraid, you just turn to the Lord. That's what Nehemiah did. He said, in the face of all of these enemies, we called on the Lord. So let me ask you a couple questions. One is, what's the unfinished stuff in your life? I'm not talking about the garage that's not cleaned out. I'm talking about the things that matter. What's unfinished? And the second question is, what's your next step? Because, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. What's unfinished in your life? What are the commitments that you haven't followed through on? Because you know what God says in the Bible? It says that a mark of spiritual maturity is that you keep your word, that you keep your promises, that you follow through on your commitments. A mark of spiritual immaturity is when you don't follow through your commitments and you don't honor your word and you don't keep your promises. So I'm not talking about the promise to clean out the garage. I'm talking about the promise that you made with your marriage. Some of you have some work to do in your marriage. What's the next step? Some of you have unfinished business in relationships. not your marriage, but maybe a relationship with someone else. And if you died today, you would take that unfinished business with you into eternity. Some of you need today, when you leave here, I mean out in the parking lot, you need to pick up the cell phone and call someone and ask for forgiveness or offer forgiveness and restore a relationship. Some of you haven't followed through on a commitment maybe you made to volunteer around here. Or maybe your unleash pledge or the promise that you made to give and tithe and those kind of things. And what's your next step in that? Some of you have not followed through on committing your life to Christ. You've thought about it, you've considered it, but you haven't done it yet. What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Others of you have put your faith and trust in Jesus, but you've never joined the church, you've never been baptized, or you've been to membership class, but you haven't been to 201. You're not moving around the growth track. What's your next step? You know, before you walk out of here today, I want you to think about what your next step should be, and then let us know what that next step is on your connection card. And if there's not a box there to check or something to circle, then you write in what's deficient in your life and just drop it into the receiving basket on your way out. And me or Travis will look at those connection cards this week and we'll help you figure out the next step. We'll help you. That's what we're here for. What's not finished in your life and what's your next step? I want to help some of you this morning with the most important step that you'll ever take in your life. Because as I mentioned, some of you have never put your faith and trust in Jesus. And I want to give you the opportunity to do that today. And so I just want to ask you, if you would, to stand with me. Our band's going to be coming up. But I want you to close your eyes and bow your head. And if I'm not talking to you, then I want you to be praying for those I am talking with, that I am talking about. But if you've never invited Jesus to come into your life, then today is the day to do that. The Bible says today is the day of salvation. Get this part right in your life. Let's pray together. If you're to the place this morning where you want to invite Jesus into your life, then you just pray this with me. Just say something like, God, I realize today that I have unfinished business with you. I've realized today, because you've been speaking to me, I realized that I believe some things about you. I know some things, but there's still a lot of things I don't know. And maybe I've been waiting for the perfect time to move into a relationship with you, but I don't want to wait anymore. I know that today I need to cross the line from unbelief to belief, from knowing some things about you to knowing you through your Son Jesus. And so just say something like this: Jesus, right now I call on you in the best way I know how. And I ask you to come into my life and forgive me of my sins. Give me the strength that it takes to turn away from my sins. I know this doesn't mean I'll be perfect, but you're perfect and you'll be living inside of me, and that's enough. That's enough. That's enough for That's enough for God in heaven, and that's enough. Give me the courage to take next steps in my life. To take my connection card from the bulletin and fill it out, and on the back of it write a B so that I can drop it in the receiving basket on the way out, and my pastors will know that today I'm believing in Jesus, and they can help me with next steps. They can talk to me about membership. They can talk to me about baptism. They can help me with next steps. And Jesus, right now, I want to thank you for loving me, for saving me. And again, now give me the courage that it takes to follow you. Jesus, it's in your name that we all pray. Amen. Leave that connection card with us. Not only if you're trusting Jesus today for the first time, but if you can volunteer and help us. You know, we need about 50 people who will just step up and say, I'll help out wherever I'm needed. Now, if you assign me somewhere and I'm not comfortable, I'll tell you about it, and you can reassign me. But if you're willing to just say, I'll help, I'll volunteer once a month for the next 4 months till we get into that building, fill out the connection card, and just on the back of it, write a V. And this week, we'll help you get plugged in. Some of these guys and gals around here need you to take some fatigue off them and jump in and help them. Let me remind you of this too. Let me remind you how important it is that you give and tithe. I have a family in our church, and I told you guys last week, and I don't know if you've seen this in the bulletin. Did it make the bulletin? How much we get? You know, last week to the Harrell family, this missionary couple who have gone off the next 2 weeks to get training. By the way, we've heard that training is going really well for both of them. We just felt like God wanted us to give a love offering to help them with expenses. We gave over $1,500. Is it $1,500 or was it $1,350? $1,500 we covered their expenses while they're gone. You see what we can do when we give like that together? It's not equal gifts, it's equal sacrifice. Guys, we've got a family in our church, a single mom and two kids. I would not call their name for anything, but they're in danger of losing their home. They've had it as tough over the last 5 or 6 years, the last 8 years of any family I've ever known. Lost a father about a year ago, and they're way behind on their mortgage and they need help. So will you give today as big as you can? Listen, our church is not all about money, and you already know that, don't you? If you've been here longer than a month, you know we're about people, not property. But we can take care of some significant needs when we give and share ministry together. So I just wanted to remind you about those things. And Kayla, don't Kayla sing awesome? Isn't she great? Listen, she's about to lead us in a song, and I want you to sing it. I don't want you to just watch her on the stage and let her sing to you. I want you to sing the song with her. It's called Sanctuary. It's a testimony song. And what this song really means is, you know, the God who doesn't live in buildings made of brick and mortar and metal. And so you know that, right? God lives in His people. And so this is a testimony song about God, you live inside of me. And Kayla, you just sing it out and lead these guys as best you can. And when you're ready, you just tell us bye. I love you guys. I'll see you next Sunday.